Alright, we're in home server world again. You're different than the last person we had on here. Who are you? What's
going
on?
Yeah, that's right. I guess I'm new to Channel 9.
Indeed.
In fact, I'm the first time I've been on Channel 9.
Alright.
So, yeah.
Good job.
And I'm a Channel 9 virgin.
Alright.
Clearly not the last, I hope. So, my name's Mark Pendergast. I've been at Microsoft for well over, almost 7 years now.
Okay.
And spent bulk of my time, 5 years, in Media Center land. So, I was on the marketing side there. And program management, and now I've switched over about 6 months ago to the Windows Home Server team, and I'm responsible for partner relationships for the marketing team.
Excellent. And here we have a special guest who also works here, but also a Niner. Who are you?
I'm Brendan Grant, also known as DeHat on the forums.
Nice.
Veteran of many flame wars.
Good, indeed.
Been with Microsoft and this team for about 5 months now. Actually came out of the community because of Channel 9 and Channel 10's coverage of Home Server, making me love it so.
Interesting. Right on.
And I'm CJ Soretto. It's my first time on 9, but you might have seen me on 10 before. And I'm a program manager on the Windows Home Server team, and I'm just hanging out, and I'm going to attempt to add some wisdom to the conversation. But most likely it will be fodder. Just a warning.
Excellent. Okay. So you guys, last time we came and talked to you, we looked at your SDK.
Right.
And I can't remember the developer's name anymore.
Chris Gray.
Went over and showed us some really nifty things that have been done. And you guys are actually coming down to PDC 08, so I'm assuming you've done some great things with your next version of your SDK.
That's right.
So let's talk about it.
Sure. In fact, we just re-released our SDK around PowerPack 1. So
Nice. Literally
weeks ago, up went our new version of the SDK, and we're pretty excited about it because there are a bunch of really new things. I'm going to defer to Brendan probably on most of these, but the one thing that I know that we're going to be pretty excited about and talking about more at PDC is client-side notifications, so better client-side notifications for developers. So we were actually brainstorming ways and reasons why that's important, and came up with one scenario. I think, Brendan, you had a pretty interesting idea in mind for how a developer could use a client-side notification.
We actually got to take a step back and talk about what notifications are.
Right. Yes.
That's smart.
If you have a home
server... Well, developers are smart, I mean, by design.
Well, got to take a step back. Yeah. When your home server is going to back up your PC, you'll usually get a little balloon on the client PC saying, oh, a backup's about to begin. Mm-hmm. If the health status of your home server is about to fail, hard drive is going bad, you yank a hard drive, the notification icon will change color, but you also get another pop-up saying, hey, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. Previously, that was only usable from the server.
Okay.
Only an application on the server could send messages into that pipe, and it would go to all client PCs. But now we can have more of a two-way communication. A client PC can write into that same channel. So it becomes possible now for a hard drive manufacturer to have smart monitoring software, or better yet, smart monitoring software detect, oh, you have a home server in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Let me send a message to them saying, little Billy's hard drive is about to go out. Maybe you should run a backup. Maybe you should go down to the store and pick up a new one.
Interesting. Very good. So, I mean, and developers can program against this,
absolutely.
Right? So you have some sort of eventing system that I would...
Yes.
So I hook into it.
We have a .NET wrapper around a COM library, and it's just a matter of registering a callback class.
Nice.
Six methods get raised whenever you need to.
Good. Excellent.
And we should point out that this isn't good just for software developers, but I'd say hardware manufacturers as well.
Hmm.
So, say a Seagate, you know, or a Western Digital, and when they're creating hard drives, we encourage them to leverage the SDK APIs that we released and build that in to the monitoring systems on their actual hard drives that they ship with PC OEMs or people can buy off the shelf. So that way, the home server can actually monitor the health of those hard drives, and if anything goes wrong, clearly there's a way for that message to get out to consumers. And that makes it much, much easier for consumers to avoid those nasty scenarios where a hard drive will die. And we know it all happens.
Absolutely.
Occasionally. So it's just more redundancy, better notification, better customer service, and hopefully satisfied customers in the end.
Excellent. So what else is going on, CJ?
Well, most of the work we did in the SDK is around making what we call an ISV, right? So a developer successful working with Windows Home Server. We did a lot of updating in just the documentation on the SDK. So before it was like, oh, here's some objects and classes, and if you use them, some things will happen. And we're not very prescriptive about what those things might be, which is a common, you know, MSDN.
Sounds like Windows, man.
Right, exactly. So we spent a lot of time doing some development in just developer documentation. Hey,
great.
Here's some great sample code, some ways to walk through this to get you up and running faster. We also went and looked at some common developer pitfalls with Home Server, and we tried to give a little bit of guidance around how to use Windows Home Server to your best advantage. So we have some guidance in the SDK now around factoring your long-running service as an actual Windows service, and then only using the Windows Home Server UI to show settings and frequently or infrequently used tasks, things for just the administrator in the home. And we realized that our SDK is really heavy on, the home server specific stuff, which tends to be the administration UI.
Mm-hmm.
And we left out a lot of the encouragement around, hey, it's a Windows platform. Use it like a server. Don't try to use this console like it's an application framework, right? Push the application to either build a website for your application that runs on the server, or build some client code on the actual that'll run on the client PCs. To use your application.
So you guys come out of the same source tree as Vista and Windows Server 2008, yes?
Actually,
same kernel?
Yeah, 2003.
It's
Server 2003.
Right. So then you don't have the thread priority that Vista has in the kernel world. That's,
yeah.
Okay.
Not yet.
So those long-running foreground processes are a pain in the ass. The developers really have the system doesn't help the developer.
Well, the foreground...
But the SDK does.
The foreground processing issue is less about the way the kernel schedules it, the way the CPU schedules that, as running it in the console. The console today, as it was intended, was a central administration app. You do a couple things there, you create a user share, you close it, you don't come back to it for 3 months until you need to give somebody different permissions.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, far too often, enthusiast developers have created long-running tasks that happen in that console, which not only prevent the console from being able to do other things, but possibly lead to instability of it. And that is a major pain point for a lot of our users, and because of that, we need to encourage people to back off of that a little and say, use the admin console for administrative things.
Yes.
Call the service to do it, and then let the service do the primary work. Have a thick client application if you really want to deal with the service every day.
Mm-hmm.
Install that on your one desktop PC. Have that control the server, but don't force that on anybody else.
Yeah, we're talking a bit in abstracts. Can you give an example of a well-factored
You're talking about the TiVo one.
I like the TiVo one. The TiVo one's pretty good. It's an enthusiast-developed application for Home Server. You install it as an add-in for Windows Home Server, and there's a very small bit of configuration UI in the admin console. When I installed it, I didn't have to set any of the options. I just installed it, looked at the settings. They looked about right, and then I went to my TiVo, and magically all of the content that was on my Home Server was available to my TiVos.
Nice.
I was like, okay, that's an add-in that really embodies the spirit of Windows Home Server. You set it up, it kind of does some stuff for you, and you forget about it. You don't have to do a lot of stuff. I seem to think that more applications could be that way. And the TiVo is an example of one where you don't have to write any client code because the client's the TiVo, right? It's built into the TiVo.
Mm-hmm.
But if you thought about a download add-in for IE, maybe you download a bunch of things and you want them to automatically download to the home server,
mm-hmm.
right? You want to write a little bit of an add-in for IE that runs on all the clients in your house, and you want to be able to say, just download this to my home server, and know that your home server will receive the command, and some process on your home server will download it for you and
sure.
manage retries and all that stuff, and eventually it'll just be sitting on your home server waiting for you.
Great. I mean, it seems like that's something that could easily be done using the Sync framework, assuming you support unmanaged frameworks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Frameworks. If it'll run on Server 2003, it'll run on Windows
Nice.
Server.
So does Live Mesh run on 2003? I'm sure you've been asked this before. And it's not a loaded question. I'm asking because I think that would be actually a really interesting scenario.
Live Mesh, as it exists today, was built for a client PC. We're looking at the ability to have a server act in the mesh of multiple users in the home, but you got to remember that Live Mesh is meant to be used interactively by the person who's claiming the device. They're saying, this is my PC.
Understood.
Right? And then they go to each machine or device that they have and they add it to their mesh. And we have an interesting problem to figure out, which is, how does a server in the home, which potentially acts on behalf of many users, how
Absolutely.
Does it offer things up to multiple users, each with their own mesh?
Mm-hmm.
So there's some users in our community today who figured out, oh, I can hack up the Live Mesh client to do this, and then they run into, well, how do I make this work for my wife and my kids? And today it's a pretty hacked up and broken experience.
Sure.
And we're working to make that better. We're engaged with the Live Mesh team.
Good.
For sure.
And as you're saying, it wasn't designed for that. But again, a professional developer, like one who goes to the PTC, could probably use the Sync framework that was written by the very creative people over in SQL Data World. I just did an interview with them on the
Sync
framework, where data is irrelevant, and they give you, in other words, a lot of the sync hook is hooked up to you, because you're really talking about synchronization of data.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway, I'm not going to rat hole on that, but the point is, a professional developer could actually write very interesting code for your platform.
In fact, it would, using that sync framework,
yeah.
I am familiar with it. If you plug in the file synchronization bits underneath to use their generic sync framework, you could, in theory, write an add-in for a home server that has a client-side component and keeps files in sync between your clients and your server very easily.
Cool. And then, because it's all metadata-based, you could have in your metadata who it actually belongs to, and that solves the problem of mom, dad, sis, the dog.
Yeah, for sure, you can do that.
Very cool, you guys. So, one of the things that people are yelling at me about on Channel 9 is I don't spend nearly enough time engaging human beings. And
what, we are not human beings?
We are not human beings in the sense that... Like,
you are a robot.
Like, who the hell...
Some people say marketing are, you know, robots.
Well, yeah, marketing,
yeah,
you know...
Whatever.
Oh, you're in marketing? Okay.
Okay, fine.
What the hell, man? What the hell's going on here? Marketing dude in this? No, so what's your story? I mean, let's take a five-minute kind of interlude here and talk to you about, you know, why you came to Microsoft, who you are, what you do. These are things that I think are missing in some of what we do.
Well, I think Microsoft is probably one of the only places that would allow a marketing type like me to have a stint for 2 years as a program manager. So, I mean, I can't think of any other company that would take really a risk on someone, you know, with an MBA and... you know, 10 years of marketing experience and say, you know, could that guy actually have the technical juice to become a PM, you know, to have a, you know, pretty technical role? And they did. Actually, I just spent 2 years over in Media Center Land and Devices World and had a great experience working as a PM there, driving AV technologies into Media Center Extenders. Mm. And it was a fascinating experience. I don't think I will certainly never regret making that career shift for that 2 years. I mean, I think I realized that being a PM is really tough, and it is. So I have utmost respect for people like CJ, and my PM counterparts over in Devices Land. But it probably wasn't what I wanted to do long term career wise. But at the same time, it's invaluable experience that helps me as a marketer understand and market to people, you know, who are more technical. So, yeah, I think that it was a fascinating experience
Excellent. And, you know, again, the PM is really a member of the engineering team.
It's the glue that holds Microsoft together. I mean, really, it is.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, man, but fair enough. Fair enough. So you're an SDE.
I am.
Right? You're a developer.
I'm a developer.
Which means you're one of the nodes in the triad, so you have the PM test and what you do. Why did you... I mean, you mentioned, I think, sort of half-heartedly that you came to Microsoft because of home server.
Not half-heartedly.
Is that really the truth?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about that.
You know, Microsoft is one of those companies that, to some extent, most developers want to work for in some way.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until home server came out that I said, okay, no, I want to do that.
So why? And explain.
The concept of an always available network device in the house is pretty cool. It's fine and dandy to take a 2003 server or a Linux server or something else, bury that underneath your bed or in the closet and run application on it, host stuff in the house. But that doesn't go very far because you have to be a server admin for that. And don't want to say horrible things about the server folks, you know, server 2003 or 2008, but fine product if you're an administrator. I'm a geek, but I don't want to go that far. And the simplicity of create a share, boom, done. Add a hard drive, right click, add, done. Was really appealing to me.
Cool.
As well as a place to, as opposed to being a sealed appliance, something I can put my code on top of as well, leverage that for myself in the house. There was actually a coding contest last year, and I thought, you know, I want to enter that. I have a little boredom on my hands.
Yeah.
So I said, my router doesn't support DHCP reservations. I was kind of angry. So I wrote a DHCP server. I didn't just plug into the one in
managed code.
I'm saying. I didn't just plug into the underlying Windows Server 2003 DHCP. I wrote my own C-sharp based DHCP server because it was a fun learning experience and I was kind of bored.
Excellent.
Works great. And that gave me the ability to do something I couldn't do otherwise.
Cool. And it scales to the single home.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. So let me ask you a question about why you became a developer and why you're so excited about actually composing the code applications.
In some respects, I like to think of it because I'm a control freak in some ways. Mm. I like to be able to... I think I'm scaring CJ. I'm not an artistic person, but there is something to be said for being able to build something and see that.
Absolutely.
And code gives you a granularity of control that you don't always have in other areas. If you really like engines, you like fixing them, well, you're bound by the limitations of the tools you have, the limitations of the metals you're dealing with. Mm. If you need new parts, well, you're SOL. With code, though, I want something to do this. Doesn't exist. Okay, I'll build it. Gives you that opportunity to build something from scratch.
Nice. Excellent.
Scared you.
No, it's just that I became a program manager because I'm a control freak.
Interesting.
I like controlling other people. I like controlling myself and what PCs do.
I don't know if it's entirely true that I like to control other people. I think it's an artifact of my job that I'm required to convince other people to do things. But at Microsoft, they say that, you know, there's a lot of definitions of a program manager. One of them that I like is that, you know, we are leaders without any authority.
Exactly.
So it is my job to define features, write specifications, and I do not actually have the management authority to tell Brendan to actually implement it. I have to convince him to implement it.
Yeah.
And that's a very interesting process that Microsoft has. You know, we create this triad of dev, test, and program management, mm-hmm. and the PMs are like the quarterbacks. You know, we kind of write everything down and we try to like call plays as best we can, but we take input from everybody on the team, and then we also interface with all the other people like the marketing and the user assistants. And I don't know. I like the lots of interpersonal interaction. I'm a very sociable individual, so I'm very drawn to the program management job.
Cool.
But I also have like a master's degree in computer science, and I've written a lot of code, and I've worked as a developer before. So, you know, for me, program management is an excellent opportunity to leverage, you know, some of my interpersonal skills, my communication skills, and also be, you know, really down deep in the technology and know what we're doing, even if I am not the actual hands at the keyboard doing the work. I'm generally the hands at the keyboard writing the email.
Very interesting indeed.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a developer, the relationship with the PM and test was always very interesting. This was on Windows. And many times, you know, PMs I found could be a pain in the ass as much as the testers were. But then again, they're thinking the same thing of the developers, right? Because you have to go into a developer's office and go, come on, man. Can you just please implement this and get this going this way? I mean,
this is really important for this customer, for this person. This
and
is
the
why.
Guy's like, get the hell out of my office and throws Coke cans at you. You're like, all right, fine.
You man. Haven't thrown a Coke can at me yet.
No. Slager does that.
Slager?
It's usually, he claims he misses, but...
It's a great... Actually, it's a brilliant idea. And Sanofsky just wrote about it in his new Engineering Windows 7 blog about the different roles in Windows. And it's the same all over the company.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That blog post is the same. So three very important roles and usually attracts different people.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to have a PM who doesn't like to interact with other human beings. It's not a good idea.
Yeah, no. Not good.
You don't like those PMs, do you?
No. Don't hate them. Hate them.
But
they do exist, actually. I mean, there are some PMs that focus on very, very technical areas that don't have a ton of interaction. So,
true.
I mean, I don't think I was one of those PMs either. I had to spend a lot of time in meetings with other PMs and dev and test. So you clearly need to have those interpersonal skills.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure.
And test is sort of the ultimate customer advocate, right? They're the ones that touch the code that you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And which implements the features that you thought up or
true.
Had convinced him actually made sense, which then, of course, bubbles up. But, you know, I've found that even if you're a director or a senior director or a GM, you really can't just say, that has to happen right now. I mean, because the other people on the team be like, no,
there's plenty of pushback. Plenty of pushback. Thank God. I think Microsoft
indeed.
Is one of the few places that you can, even as a low individual contributor, be the voice of reason. should be a really
low
do
individual
this.
Contributor?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I've vetoed plenty of things.
Oh yeah.
I don't want to, well, plenty is not the right word, but
yeah.
There have been plenty of things. Brenda, we should do it this way. Like hell, that's it would work. How about we do it this way? Yeah. Extensible, better. We don't have to good. Think with it as much in future.
Perfect.
And
for
I've
sure.
had one many wonderful with my program lead when he's telling me or suggesting that I do something one way.
Absolutely.
Of course, yeah. I think you have to have your arguments in a pretty rational form. You have
sure.
to have, here's why we shouldn't do it, and here are some alternatives, and
yeah.
be positive about it. I think that's one of the key roles as a PM, especially. You need to have good alternatives if the dev or the task pushes back. That's, I think, one of the key aspects of that role.
For sure.
Yeah, got to have some good alternatives.
Good.
And, you know, as a marketer, too, you know, I try to put my PM hat every once in a while.
Every once in a while. So CJ, why can't we do this?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that because, you know, I think there's a misperception out in the real world that marketing people are, you know, they're going to be the first to go if we have to, pare down and do, you know, we spend all of our money. So my point is, there's, you know, amongst developers anyway, in the technical community in general,
yeah.
there's sort of this, it's just marketing bullshit.
Yeah.
But in fact, marketing is a critical part of a business, and isn't just about, you know, coming up with ideas about cows floating through.
Right. It's not just about advertising.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the misperception
exactly.
that I felt when I was a former marketer in on the PM team was, it's just about, you know, putting together a marketing campaign, advertising, web stuff. No, it's definitely not. In my role, and what I like about it right now is that I'm not a MarCom guy. I never claim to be a branding expert or anything like that. I like CJ, I like working with people. And the people I interface with are partners. And so my role is to interface with the OEMs or the ISVs who are building products and or services and convincing them that they should do it on Home Server because it's an exciting and growing platform. Mm-hmm. And I need to do is bring market data to them saying, here's the opportunity to build an application or a Home Server so that we have a growing ecosystem. And it's not at all, at least in my role, it's not at all about creating, you know, fancy logos and branding campaigns. It's more about showing the business opportunity, convincing them, and then supporting them on the marketing side after they decide to really, you know, go forth with it.
Excellent. So let's.
And if I could throw another Home Server plug
sure.
on that one.
Oh,
Home Server, I think that we do a great job of making Mark successful in that role because we are an excellent Windows platform that you can take the investment you've already made in your application or service and refactor it and make something that works really well with Windows Home Server.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when Mark's going out to partners and saying, hey, you know, why don't you take that Linux NAS appliance and like run Windows Home Server on it? Well, what's the value in it for the OEM?
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, they get, you know, this whole new ecosystem of ISV projects or products to consume so they can add value to their application or to their server without building it themselves. And they can take all of that software value they already developed for their Windows clients and they can port that really easily to Windows Home Server. Right? So part of my job is to make sure that the things we do on Home Server make sense for our partners
sure.
so that turns Mark into an order taker rather than a marketer. Right? That's the interaction between the two of us.
So I guess, you know, one of the things I'm confused about, and I don't think I've done a Channel 9 interview where we actually, you know, dug into Windows Home Server from an operating system perspective. I mean,
sure.
the fact that you're using Windows 2003 kernel, it's still a fat kernel. So the Linux argument would be it's a much smaller kernel, smaller footprint. So that's why an ISV might say, or an OEM might say, no, I want to have a small Linux footprint, blah, 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 for this teeny device.
Mm-hmm.
What I would ask, though, is if you were running 2008 as your core, you could have a hypervisor. And in that case,
yes.
you could run, I could have a Windows Home Server that was running.
Right.
Want to run Linux that interoperates
sure.
with Windows? Rock it. Here you go. So are you guys thinking about, as we think about the future of this, you're going to move to a more advanced kernel than just something that's 5 years old?
Well, Home Server version 2, we call it codename Windows Home Server codename Vail, because we don't know what the name of the product
cool.
will be, right? Will be based on the Windows 7 server code base.
Nice.
So it won't be 2008. We're skipping it.
Yeah. Right on, bro. Even better.
And we are definitely looking at ways, like Hypervisor, to give application developers the ability to kind of segment themselves apart. So you might say that my long-running service, you know, I want it to run, but I want it to be super reliable, and if someone else's add-in to the same box goes down, I don't want that to take me down, right?
Cool.
And so we're looking at ways to sandbox and compartmentalize add-ins, and we're also looking at hypervisor for, you know, the concept of, hey, I want to boot my own super lightweight OS and run that in parallel to the Windows Home server. And there should be a lot of really exciting stuff that OEMs and ISVs can do in the home server V2 timeframe that, you know, the operating system just doesn't have in its existing form today.
Excellent. But, I, you know, again, I don't have a home server myself.
That's your excuse.
That's a great question. I mean, but
yeah,
what I would ask you guys is, because I'm really sort of unfamiliar with this territory, and I know that Larry Larson on Channel 10 probably has one of these things, but I myself don't. And so I'm wondering, like, what's the usage, what's it like in the real world? How are people using this, and what is the type of person that would set up a Windows Home server in their home?
I guess that's why the camera's on the marketing guy here. But I'd say, the first thing I ask people when people ask me, oh, what's so great about home servers, I turn it around and ask them, do you have multiple PCs in the home? And
they say no?
If people only have one PC, you know, I would honestly say home server might not be the right thing for you. There are probably some less expensive solutions out there for you as a single PC owner. And, you know, you got to be frank. Especially as a marketer, you need to know who your target audience is and who it's not, right? And I think it's as important to know who you're not targeting as it is to who you are targeting. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at PC trends today, a vast majority of households out there are multi-PC households now. The PC penetration has reached a point where it's a very saturated market, and you're seeing a lot more people bring home second, third PCs, and a lot of these PCs are laptops, like the one that I have right here on my desk. And the laptop scenario, I think, becomes really compelling for people who makes it a compelling pitch to sell home server to them, and simply because laptops are mobile PCs that have a tendency to either get lost or to get damaged or to get stolen. So the propensity for bad things to happen to that PC grows up dramatically as people start bringing, you know, laptops home. So I ask consumers, hey, do you care about the data that's on that PC? Very likely that they're going to say yes, they do care about that. So I say, hey, one of the great value props of home server is the ability to have automatic full image backups of those PCs in your household. And so that really is our big selling point. It's a full image backup, by the way, too. And that's really important to highlight because it doesn't just take a snapshot of your data or your applications. It's the whole
PC. The whole image, so in other words.
Whole image.
Excellent.
Yeah, the whole image.
Apps, app data, everything.
Yeah, and we actually have some smarts built on top of that that actually, as soon as you take the first snapshot, the next time it takes a snapshot, it goes back and looks at things that have changed, the deltas.
Sure.
Right? So ISVs can, or I'm saying developers care about this because this means that it's a much more performant backup the second time you have that automatic backup happen.
Excellent.
It doesn't require the full 2 hours to actually get that thing backed up to your home server. It's just the deltas, and that's really, really cool.
And that also applies to individual PCs in the house. If I've got two PCs running Vista, there's only going to need to be one copy of Vista sitting on the server. My custom files will take a little while to end up there, too.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, all those PCs can be protected there.
Great. So let me ask you guys this. Let's talk turkey. I'm a developer. I'm going to the PDCOA. So let's do the marketing for PDC now. Okay?
All right.
Woo! You happy?
Love PDC.
Ritzy, you happy?
Love PDC.
All right. So PDCOA is coming. Yay. Jennifer Ritziger storms through the door.
Hi, Jennifer.
Why am I going to want to go to your sessions? What are your sessions?
Okay, we're doing two sessions at PDC. The first session is going to be all about how to take your existing software application that you have built up for Windows and turn it into a really first-class Windows Home Server add-in. So take the thing you've already got, build it as a service, build some admin UI for it, make it installable as a home server add-in. There's this whole MSI voodoo magic you need to do to make it easily installable on home server, because you got to remember home servers don't have keyboards, mice, or monitors.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so you know you don't just like go to the desktop and install. So a little bit about how to take your existing investment, leverage it, build something really cool on Windows Home Server. We've got a really interesting demo in the works there about, you know, controlling parts of your home and doing some automation stuff to kind of get people's brains moving and get you excited about what you could potentially build for a home server. And then the second session at PDC is going to be all about remote access. So one of our touted features that we don't do a good job of exposing or getting users excited about is remote access. You can set up a free domain name like cjshouse.homeserver.com, and then whenever you type that in, you actually get tunneled back to your Windows Home Server.
Nice.
Right? So you can get all your files when you're away, you can remote desktop into other PCs in your house. It's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
The cool thing is that we have this this developer story there where a developer can stand a website up on Windows Home Server and then basically add functionality to our remote access. So if you've got a service running on the home server, let's say it's like a media streaming service, and you want to be able to stream that media outside the house, well, you can do some things there by plugging into our remote access, standing up a web page, and providing your UI to remote users as well.
Nice.
And then in that session, we're also cooking up some kind of future stuff that'll give you ideas of how, you know, remote access might evolve and some technologies working on there, but we'll save all that for the actual PDC. But our real goal is to help developers who are interested in Home Server really understand, oh, okay, here's how I can best leverage the platform, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's some cool ideas to get my juices flowing, and here's access to the brightest minds working on the product who will actually be there, you can talk to. Got some hands-on labs, so you can try some of the stuff out if you've never bothered to download our SDK.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe show you some cool stuff that we wouldn't show anybody else about our future thinking for the future versions of Windows Home Server.
Outstanding. That's good. One last question I would ask is the interoperation. I'll ask this guy this, because he likes that word, between devices and my home server, right? So you mentioned laptops. But of course, what's also becoming ubiquitous are just handheld devices, which could be running Windows, may not be running Windows, but they could speak the same protocol.
That is true.
So how does that work with Windows Home Server if I wanted to sync content on my home server with content on my phone?
It depends on how you access the home server. Today, we do not currently have a story for that. Mm. If you want your great example, I think was a Zune.
Sure.
You're listening, Zune team. I would like my Zune to be able to synchronize wirelessly.
Zune. We look Zune in the handy arm wrapper for working out, you know.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you have that just ready?
Ready.
Yeah.
Always synced.
All right.
So talk to the Zune team. What is it that you want?
One of the killer features of Zune is it does wireless syncing over your home network.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that requires my desktop or laptop or other commonly used PC to be on.
Mm.
Why should I have to do that if all my music is sitting on my home server?
Exactly.
My home server's always available.
Hmm. Fascinating. So they should write an add-in.
So in many cases, it's not a matter of Windows Home Server saying, okay, now we support Zune, now we support X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of some of those developers saying, this is an interesting proposition for us. That box is going to be in the house. Why don't we talk to it directly?
Beautiful. Cool. So come to the PDC, meet. Are you guys going to the PDC?
We're all
going to
be there at the PDC.
Right on.
Absolutely.
You need to come Dahat. Oh,
Dahat.
I get it, Dahat. You need to come to the Channel 9 Lounge and meet other Niners that are going
to
be there.
I'm
you guys are, of course, welcome as well.
Very good.
It's just he's been a longtime Niner at Coffee House in great flame wars with other developers.
Awesome.
And you guys should stop by the Channel 9 Lounge. Maybe we could even have a demo set up or something. But
sure,
maybe,
right on.
You know,
cool.
Maybe not. We'll talk to Dan's running the 9 Lounge, I think. I don't know.
We've got a mobile setup that we can bring along. Sure. And we might have some, you know, marketing tchotchkes to hand out the Channel 9 Lounge, too. You know, you need to have a little bit of that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, are you guys in the big room?
We are in the big room, and we're going to have a really nice lounge with various interesting things going on.
Oh, right on. Well, we'll try to stop by.
Sure.
We should also point out that we've got not one, but two kiosks in the big room, in the Microsoft Pavilion. So
wow.
We encourage people to swing on by. And come chat with us.
And we're forcing our group program manager,
that's right,
and our dev manager, and potentially our product unit manager, to do cycles at the booth. So if there's features that you want in Windows Home Server and you want to, like, you know, get the decision makers' ears. There's a very good chance that you, if you come to PDC, you could stop by and actually beat them with a stick if you wanted to. You might get kicked out, but you know, just talking to them authoritatively might be a good idea.
And that's one of the cool things about the PDC is you get to come and meet the developers and sort of
the whole
technical
team.
Minds behind it.
It's not just the marketing types. It's not just
no,
the marketing
it's
types. It's the people actually doing the hardcore coding, and that's really what's cool about PDC.
Absolutely. Yeah. Developer to developer. Excellent, you guys. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank
and,
you.
Thanks for joining us for a Channel 9 random conversation. Boom. End on the marketing guy.
All right. Okay.